Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And my guest today is Craig Williams. Craig is an information technology specialist at the Campo Fire Department. And he's here to cover probably the hottest issue in East County, which is, are we prepared for wildfires and responding to structure fires and medical calls? And just how prepared or unprepared is the new county fire authority? Now, the fire authority has been going around flooding the media with videos and press releases touting its success in improving fire protection in the unincorporated areas of San Diego. But Craig, you have a little different story to tell.
Yes, unfortunately, it is a hot issue. I like that. That's very good. The information you get from the county, from their press releases and videos about the status of the fire authority and the status of fire service in San Diego County, when you look a little deeper into it, it's not really accurate.
Now, you have some specifics. I was at a meeting where Supervisor Jacob had brought in people from the county fire authority and the various planning groups and fire groups who were concerned about what they're seeing out here. This was after our report had uncovered the Boulevard fire station being closed for 2 months during fire season, and that actually came about from some of the data that you dug out. But you ended that meeting rather explosively, passing around a report that showed just how understaffed some of these fire stations appear to be. Give us some examples, Craig, of what you found, first of all, at your own Campo station, what was claimed and what you found.
Well, at Campo Station, last year was one of our worst years ever as far as staffing. 5 years ago, before the fire authority started, the volunteer stations recruited and trained their own people, and they actually worked for free. There wasn't any stipend involved. And the last year that we had absolutely control over the situation was 2010, and Campo Fire had only 8 dark days all year, and the dark day, of course, is when the station is dark, there's nobody there, the lights are turned off. So that was 8 in 2010. Calendar year 2013, as of October 31st, we had had 71 dark days.
71 dark days where the station was completely closed. And I believe there were additional days where there was only one person there, right?
Well, actually, yeah, that's the total. There were 42 days when nobody was there, and 29 days when there was only one person there who effectively cannot do anything. They can't leave the station with one person.
Right.
Drive the truck.
You need a crew to run a
so
truck.
So two together equal to 71
so
days.
So 71 effectively dark days, so versus 8 before. So how is that an improvement? The County Fire Authority, we all thought, was supposed to improve that. Now, even on the days, however, when it was staffed, you found that the average was only 1.7 firefighters per station, not even 2 per station across all of them. Now, you looked at it beyond your own station. You then took a look at all of the stations in the rural areas, and you found that the number of total staff that was claimed was actually sort of an inflated figure in that it included an awful lot of administrative personnel and people who would never be available to actually help put a fire out. Can you give us some examples?
Yes, I've been involved with Campo Fire since 2000, when I found out it was a volunteer station, and I moved to Campo to retire. It was a volunteer station, so they had very poor radios and no computers, and with my background in radios and computers, I've been able to help them for quite a few years. And I've been fighting this fight for a number of years. It culminated the middle of last year when there was another video on the county website about how they had 500 volunteer firefighters.
Yeah, 476, and, I think.
Yeah, they'd gone up before that. That was November. Before that, they had gone up over 500 in the middle of last year.
Okay, and of those, how many are guys that, or women who can't fight a fire?
That's part of the problem. And again, that particular thing that started me off, there were 10 stations that were totally dark, and all 10 of them were in Dine Jacobs District. All 10. And I advised her that there might have been dark in other
districts. What was her reaction when you told her that, Craig?
She was shocked. She had no idea this was going on.
Okay.
That was her response to me. So just on an average, when we did that meeting in November, they had listed, and I've got to turn
I've got the numbers here. I'll read them off. Yeah, in the November meeting, they had listed 476 members in the San Diego County Fire Authority roster. However, of those, once you toss out the administrative personnel and so forth, it left only 246, or about half of them, who were actually even listed as firefighters. And of those, 23 of them hadn't pulled a shift in the last 3 months, so they're really not working. And then even fewer, only 7 of them, were listed as water tender drivers. That's across all these stations in the rural areas, folks. And only 101 of them were listed as drivers for the fire engines, 62 of whom were active. And 7 of those never pulled a shift. So in the last 3 months. So basically, are you saying, Craig, that at a lot of these stations, there was either nobody there at all, nobody who could drive a fire truck, nobody who could drive a water tender?
Yeah, that's the basic problem, is the ability to get in the truck and take it outside the station.
Now let's show this as a real-world example here. The Hannah Anderson fire, where the kidnapper had her mother and her brother inside this home and set it on fire. How long did it take for fire trucks to get there?
Well, fortunately, a Cal Fire station in White Star responded fairly quickly, and then they brought in the stations from Campo and surrounding stations at Cal Fire. These are wildland fire units that have 300-400 gallons of water on them. The problem was that the closest water tender was 45 minutes away, because the Boulevard station where the water tender is was dark, and our Campo station, that was one of the new water tenders that the county bought them. Mm-hmm. The Campo station with our water tender that the Indian Gaming Grant bought us, we were dark too.
Two of the closest stations were dark, and there was no water tender within 45 minutes, so they ran out of water.
Yeah, well, and I wonder why people don't ask the question, because one of the local news stations ran videos of this fire at 45 minutes after it started, of course, because it took them a while to get up there. In a video, you see 5 firefighters. 4 of them are standing around. The 5th one is squirting a little inch-and-a-half water hose on this massive fire, because that's all the water he had.
Now, the other thing is that there's an average of only 1.7 firefighters. Assuming station's not closed, not having a dark day, even when it's open, there's only 1.7 firefighters per station on average. Craig, how many firefighters does it take to properly respond to a house fire? Let's suppose my house is on fire, I live out there, and I'm trapped inside up on the second story or something. Are these firefighters going to get there in time to save me?
Well, probably not. Hopefully you have a good escape plan. And they commonly call that in the backcountry surround and drowned, because our lead times are long, 15 mm-hmm. or 20 minutes sometimes.
So this is really threatening lives.
Yeah. And you have to have a minimum of 4, probably 5 firefighters before you can go inside, because you have to have 2 inside, 2 outside to rescue the 2 inside.
Now, 15 to 20 minutes for response time is a long time. The federal standard, I believe, is something like 8 minutes or 9 minutes. I know I've heard it said that within 8 minutes, a small fire can fully engulf a structure. In the urban areas, by contrast, I live in the San Miguel District, for instance, which has some urban and some rural, but they have an average response time of around 8 minutes, and I know they get really worried if it gets to be even a minute over that. A lot of stations, it's 6 minutes or 7 minutes.
When I moved to the backcountry after 30-some years in La Mesa, I didn't have any unrealistic expectations. It's wilderness area out there. Mm-hmm. The 800 square miles of the Mountain Empire is 2% of the county's population. So I would not expect any kind of city response times out in the middle of nowhere, because mm-hmm. you'd have a fire station every 10 miles in every 2,000 people, and that's just not feasible.
Mm-hmm.
So you need, when you live out there, to be somewhat independent. You really need to have escape plans. You really need to fireproof your vehicle and your neighborhood and your structures. But unfortunately, the other part of it is 90% of the fire calls are medical aid. A number of us are senior citizens. We figure if we can't survive the 45 minutes it takes to get to the hospital, well, that's it. So
yeah, so the dark days, at the very least, if you got these dark days stopped and got somebody there that's a medical personnel, that would certainly save some lives.
And they have done that to some extent. Some of the departments have pickup trucks with medical response on it, and they have a listing, a new category, as emergency medical responder. And as of April 3rd of this year, they had one member listed as an emergency medical responder.
Oh, my goodness, just one. For the entire, how many square miles is it back here? Incredible.
Oh, lots. This is for the whole county.
For the whole county.
But, you know, keep in mind, all the firefighters are EMTs.
Yeah. Okay. Now, another issue. So after you passed out this report and kind of embarrassed some of the fire personnel, I think, and surprised Supervisor Jacob, showing how severely understaffed these stations were across the county and how many dark days a lot of them were having, I understand that now you can't get at that information anymore. Tell me about that, Craig.
Well, there's been an update to the county computer system, and I'm sure it was just a normal update. We used to be able to tell from our station how many stations were not staffed. We can't do that now.
So I think you're being a little facetious there when you're saying you're sure that this is there's no relationship between.
I spent 47 years in the information technology business, and these things happen. But we can see in our Battalion 4, which is basically Campo Lake Marina and Pine Valley out to the Imperial County line, we can see what stations are not manned in our battalion, but we can't see the rest of the county anymore.
So we're going to be asking the County Fire Authority and our supervisors why there's this cover-up of this information. Maybe it was just an innocent mistake. Maybe it was somebody trying to cover the information up. We really don't know, but we intend to find out and be doing some public records requests to try to get at that information and hopefully get that back opened up, because I think it's extremely important for the public and media to be able to know whether our fire stations are manned or not. Now, another issue. As you've said, Craig, the number one responsibility of government is public safety. Let's look at some dollars and compare just how much San Diego County is spending compared to some other places. Now, I remember after the 2003 or 2007 fires, Senator Feinstein convened a hearing here on the issue, and she put the chairman of the Board of Supervisors in the hot seat at that time, and she asked him, how much do you spend on firefighting? And he said he didn't know. She said, well, I do, because my staff looked it up, and she read off the number. She then proceeded to bring up the fire chiefs or representatives from the fire stations in Riverside, Orange County, Los Angeles County, and ask them how much they spent. And guess what? It was a lot more. In some cases, 10 times more for counties that didn't have any more land area. So we were wondering if that's improved, and I understand you've done a little bit of research on that, Craig. First off, let's start off. How much did our county spend last year on firefighting?
They will give you a lot of numbers, and the supervisors are fond of talking about how they've spent $250 some million
over many years
in 07, and forget to tell you, a lot of that was equipment that we've established.
So if we just look at
the operational budget,
which is staffing,
is $15 million a year.
$15 million a year,
which,
and that's all they're spending.
Includes the 18 bureaucrats of the fire authority.
And most of that comes from the federal grants, right?
I really don't know. It's out of the county general fund. You know, they can move things around all day long.
Okay, let's just use that figure, though. $15 million total from all sources for the operations, which is basically the staffing, the actual firefighting. How does that compare with any other county that you looked at that would be comparable?
Well, we looked at Riverside because Riverside continues to do what San Diego did in the late 70s. In the late 70s, San Diego contracted with Cal Fire to provide all the fire protection services.
Mm-hmm.
They backed out of that in the late 70s because it was too expensive, created the volunteer and small fire agencies. And then at the time, 5 years ago, like for Campo, for instance, our budget was about $65,000 a year.
That's all you got, $65,000.
$65,000. So, you know, we sell a lot of cookies and have spaghetti dinners and that sort of thing.
Okay, so how much is Riverside County spending on its firefighting?
Riverside County has a unique situation because they do, in fact, hire Cal Fire to take care of all their unincorporated areas in a number of their small cities. Mm-hmm. They do not have a fire authority per se. The operation is under their Office of Emergency Services with the normal staff that they would have.
So different structuring.
And Cal Fire is the chief and runs all the stations. And if you look at the website for their Riverside County Fire, you'll see the chief has got his Cal Fire patch on.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a fire authority chief. $230 million.
They spend $230 million, and our county spends $15 million. How big is Riverside County compared to San Diego County? Is it bigger, smaller, or about the same?
It's smaller in land mass.
So they're spending
smaller in population.
Well over 15 times the money, 15 times more money on a smaller amount of land up there than we are down here. And we've had the two worst wildfires in California history.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look and San Diego County is bigger than 21 other states. And the five-year report that San Diego County put out recently on their fire plan noted that San Diego County was as big as the state of Connecticut. And one could imagine the state of Connecticut with 165 firefighters.
Stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back with Craig Williams from the Campbell Fire Department after a station ID.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, you're a conservative yourself. You're not a wild-eyed liberal spender, Craig, by any means, based on comments I know that you've posted on our website and on various issues. But it sounds to me like you're saying, bottom line, is they just need to spend a whole lot more money than they're spending on firefighting. Is that the bottom line?
Well, yes. I started out with this project the middle of last year, hoping they would at least be honest with the citizens in their reporting when they put out numbers and when they make innuendos like they bought all this equipment, therefore it probably is being used when we now know it can't be.
Yeah, I've heard you say that you don't really need any more equipment. What you need is a lot more manpower.
Yeah, that's never been the problem. When they started this thing after the 07 fires, they got the volunteer departments and the small departments together in the back countries.
I mean, devil's advocate, where would the money come from? I know people out there have also been resistant to, for example, you know, any time someone mentions the word fire tax or fire fees, people just about break out in hives over it. They don't want that. So where would the money come from to fund this? If you could wave your magic wand or we put you in charge of the supervisors tomorrow, what would you do to get that money?
Well, they probably wouldn't like my philosophy because, again, the primary purpose of government is to provide public services that citizens cannot provide themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You can't create your own police department. You can't create your own fire department.
Right.
You can't build your own paved roads. So until those things are accomplished fairly effectively, other projects like making sure the last 20% have high-speed internet is really not under preview of government. That's a private enterprise kind of thing.
So things like some of these parks they've been building, or, you know, last time I was downtown, I noticed the supervisors were building a lovely waterfront park around their own building and demolishing the parking lots and building whole new underground, you know, multi-story parking structures. I couldn't help but wondering, Craig, how many millions of dollars were spent on that project and how many firefighters you might have been able to hire for a number of years, at least drivers for the fire trucks maybe and the water tenders. What does a water tender get paid?
The volunteers, and you know, they talk about community volunteers. There mm-hmm. are no community volunteers anymore. Because of requirements that the Sacramento legislature has put on, volunteers have to have the same level of training as a paid firefighter. And the only way the county has been able so far to respond to that is to be a reserve or volunteer and get $80 a shift, and some get a little more because
$80 a shift.
The shift is 24 hours. 24-hour shift. In order to get to that basic position, the firefighter one position, you have to go to the fire academy, which currently is Heartland Fire Academy out mm-hmm. in El Cajon. You have to go for 6 months, 10 hours a day, 4 days a week. Now, people like me that are long retired could do that except being a lifelong smoker, I can't pass a physical.
Yeah.
And that's why I had to resign as my public affairs job that I had at the fire department.
So with all this fancy training, I know when we were there at the meeting in Supervisor Jacob's office in November, the guys from the fire authority were telling us that, you know, this is kind of a bump in the road and we've got all these people that we're going to be training. How many more have actually been trained since November that you're aware of for these key positions, Craig?
Well, there's been the 50 that graduated from the first academy, I think 49 of them. I think we've got one of those left.
In Campo.
There's probably 30 of them, 40 of them left maybe. A number went to paid firefighting jobs. The problem is, even after they come out of the academy, then they have to go through another number of months to get their driver operator permit before they can drive the fire truck.
But we're almost into fire season now. I mean, it's April.
Yeah.
July is not very far away here.
Well, we had a fire recently, the gunfire that was up off of Sunrise Highway that took a little bit to get under control because, of course, they were winds. So all of these aerial resources the county is so proud of were all sitting on the ground. And, you know, there were people hiking out to the fire that thank God for the hand crews in CAL FIRE.
Yeah, when there's high winds, and you've had 100-mile-an-hour winds out there during the Harris Fire, you can't fly aircraft then. And, of course, if it's nighttime, the fire starts, heaven forbid, at night. It's the boots on the ground. That's really the only defense, unless it gets big enough that they can bring in these giant fly-at-night, maybe military planes or something. But in the early stages, the boots on the ground, the firefighters at the front lines are really the most important thing, correct?
Well, yes, and nothing's really changed since Benjamin Franklin established the first volunteer fire department in the United States. Unfortunately, what the public sees, and you can see them any time because you just go into YouTube and Google San Diego County Fire Authority, and you'll find all these wonderful videos. There's two points they make in the video. The first point is we'll never have an event like we did in 03 and 07. And the second point is we've got all this equipment that we're going to operate. Well, the first point, of course, anyone with any fire experience will tell you the only reason the 07 and the 03 fires went out is because the wind quit blowing. And then they could put the fire out. And we've already established the fact that all this fancy equipment doesn't have anybody to operate it anyway.
So with this severe shortage of the staffing that you've laid out for us, how great will the risk be the next time a wind-driven firestorm gets started? Do you believe that we are safer today or less safe, Craig, than we were before?
It's sort of a trick question. We're probably just as safe as we were before because those kind of fires are handled by CAL FIRE and have never been taken up by the roles of the volunteers. We played some roles in Campo in both the fires as first in with our equipment and stayed on for a number of days. The real issue is the fires start in Colorado, then they go to Arizona, then they go to Northern California, and then they go to L.A., and then they come down here.
Right.
In a normal rainy year. With this extended drought, these lightning fires are going to start very shortly in Northern California, are going to be much bigger. The potential for bigger fires is better than it's been in 100 years. As long as we're the only fire in town, it's fine. I mean, we get a fire here, the Shockey fire back there a couple of years ago, south of Boulevard. They had CAL FIRE units all the way from Fresno that came in. So there's enough initial attack from CAL FIRE, which has had increased staffing and new equipment the last few years. They're doing a great job with the wilderness and wildland. They'll get stuff out of Riverside. They'll get stuff out of all the way up the state if necessary. The problem is when you get into these extended fire seasons where it's already thin. There are fires in Northern California, Central California, and
what
down
happens
in Southern
if your
California.
House catches fire? You're saying there may not be anybody there.
You need fire insurance. You need good clearance around your property, and that's just the way it is when you live out in the country. My personal opinion is if it wasn't for the 03 and the 07 fires, there would have been nothing done, as there had been nothing done by the county since the late 70s. But these two fires impacted the people in the city. They burned through the country and burned into the city. So now you've got the city involved, and you have a lot more people, and they put up a lot bigger stink.
Yes.
So the politicians had to answer to them.
Now, you're an information technology specialist, Craig. Apart from the shortages in the staffing that you've identified at these rural fire stations. I understand there's also some problems with some of these much-touted computers that were brought in. Tell us what happened there.
About 4 years ago, they spent some federal grant money, and they bought very good and very expensive, and rightly so.
Yeah, in a couple thousand dollars a piece or more.
About four.
4,000.
The Panasonic Toughbooks, and you really need that for the fire service. And the problem is they bought that with grant money, knowing full well they had no money to buy any application software for them, no money even to initialize the GPS systems they installed, certainly no money to do the 3G internet so they could actually communicate with the dispatch center, and no money to buy the software at the dispatch center to interface with the system.
So bottom line, what is the answer here? We've seen severe cuts in the number of firefighters, not nearly enough water tender drivers, not nearly enough firefighters, questions with the software and how what limited resources there are is being spent. What, in your view, Craig, needs to be done? What is realistic that could and should be done to make us safer out in these backcountry communities?
The bottom line is 5 years, maybe 6 years ago now, when they started this whole fire authority thing, they brought us together, all the volunteer departments and the small agencies, and says, what do you really need? And we said, well, we need two things. We need more trained firefighters, and we'd like to have some centralized purchasing and equipment maintenance.
How much of that has happened?
We don't have more trained firefighters, but there are fewer. There are no community volunteers left anymore because they can't meet the new requirements.
So to be clear, we have far fewer firefighters in the rural areas today than we did before the 2007 wildfires.
That's correct. And that, of course, does not include CAL FIRE. They're a whole different ballgame. We're talking about smaller fire agencies like Campo and Borrego Springs.
The ones who would respond if your house is on fire, your business is on fire. What can or should the public do about this if they're concerned, Craig?
I think you ought to contact your local supervisor, no matter where you're at in the county. And you may even want to go by your local fire department and see if you're one of the ones affected. Probably half the fire departments in the county are affected by this. The fire authority says they have 54 active fire stations. Tell them to get their priorities in effect. The priorities, you can also find the five-year plan, the SDCFA five-year plan on the internet. It's interesting as you look over their goals. Here's the future goals for the San Diego Fire Authority. Maintain well-trained volunteer firefighters. That's goal number six. It's behind improve regional fire prevention and public awareness, whatever that means. It's behind maintain facilities, equipment, technology, and apparatus. Everybody loves technology. I've been in it since vacuum tubes. And unless you throw a computer at the fire, put out the burning bush, it doesn't do you much good. It's behind maintaining strong relationships. It's behind cost-effective services, excellent customer service, and behind fiscal sustainability. All of those are ahead of goal number six, maintain well-trained volunteer firefighters.
And I'm assuming you're going to tell us that maintaining those well-trained volunteer firefighters really needs to go back to being the number one priority, not the number six priority.
That seems like a good idea from everybody I talk to, yeah.
Well, Craig, we're out of time today, but I want to thank you very, very much for bringing this important burning issue to the attention of our listeners here on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Well, we thank, in the back communities, we thank you for running this story because the rest of the media has not really been much involved in it.
Well, thank you very much, Craig. Now, as an update, after our interview with Craig Williams was taped last week for airing today, we reached out to the county for a response, and we were told that the fire authority has implemented a new online application portal to help recruit qualified volunteers for firefighting. The county is also recruiting at firefighter career track programs in community colleges, and the county maintains that the fire authority has improved the quality and level of emergency response coverage in the rural backcountry. They say that if a station's closed, the area is not left completely uncovered because firefighters from other areas will eventually respond. How long remains to be seen. The county notes that it spends more than the national average on firefighting and more per capita than Orange County. However, San Diego's backcountry is very large geographically, 1.5 million acres, and our rural areas are dry in these drought-stricken times and prone to Santa Ana winds that have historically fueled catastrophic fires, unlike urban communities elsewhere that can safely spend less. The County Fire Authority claims to have a 10.5-minute average response time, with 90% of calls responded to within 20 minutes. Still, that is too long to save a home on fire or a person suffering a medical emergency such as a heart attack. Fire and medical experts we consulted all agree. And the problem has gotten worse, believe it or not, since our interview with Craig Williams, according to a second whistleblower at a major fire district who spoke with us this week under condition we not publish his name for fear of retribution at his job. This whistleblower told us that on Wednesday, April 16th, 7 rural fire stations were completely dark. He named 5 of them. We called them all and found no answer at all 5. By contrast, other stations we called as a spot check all had somebody answering their phones who could confirm that there were firefighters on duty. Even more disturbing, our source told us that this situation will be getting, quote, boatloads worse in the next week or so, because, he said, CAL FIRE has hired away San Diego County Fire Authority volunteers to help CAL FIRE in wildfire season, leaving a gaping hole in the County Fire Authority that it has not filled in its rural stations. According to our source, who is not a firefighter and has no vested interest, the solution would be for the county to increase volunteer stipends to $200 a day so that volunteers can afford to give up their day jobs. Mr. Williams agreed with that assessment. The county's entire budget for volunteer firefighter stipends is just $1.4 million, according to the County Fire Authority. This raises an intriguing question. If someone dies because the fire station near their home is closed due to lack of staffing, might the county be at risk of a costly wrongful death lawsuit? Perhaps not investing in higher stipends to attract enough firefighters to protect our rural areas adequately may prove penny wise, pound foolish. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
1 year after the California Public Utilities Commission suspended an application for the controversial gas-fired Quail Brush power plant proposed near Mission Trails Regional Park and schools in Santee, the applicant has taken steps to keep the proposal alive. An attorney representing the applicant, Quail Brush Jinko LLC, has sent a letter to the Public Utilities Commission asking that the suspension be extended for an additional year to provide time for the applicant and SDG&E to analyze commercial opportunities for the project in light of the current or changed circumstances in SDG&E's service territory, as well as any amendments that may be needed, the letter states, adding, the applicant continues to believe that SDG&E and the citizens of San Diego need the generation that the project would provide, and that development of the project remains feasible. By extending the suspension rather than withdrawing the application, the applicant could file a request to reinstate the proceeding and end the suspension during the next 12 months. The project had drawn widespread bipartisan opposition that included Santee Mayor Randy Vopel, the Santee City Council, the San Diego City Council, San Diego Mayor Bob Filner, and Santee School District and environmental groups. Opponents have voiced concern over pollution, noise, environmental impacts, visual blight, and fire danger, since the natural gas facility lies in the path consumed by the fast-moving 2003 Cedar Fire. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Veterans from across America converged on Capitol Hill on March 31st. Meeting with members of Congress and the administration, they sought to help prevent suicide among returning veterans. The Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Association planted 1,896 flags on the National Mall, one for every veteran who has died by suicide so far this year alone. The Veterans Administration estimates that 22 veterans die by suicide every single day. The Day of Action also included a press conference with Senator Walsh, who introduced the Suicide Prevention for America's Veterans Act legislation. Vets are also asking President Barack Obama to sign an executive order to help stop veteran suicides. The veterans group is asking the public to urge their congressional members to take action. You can also call the White House at 1-888-659-8549 and ask the president to sign a comprehensive executive order to combat veteran suicide and help end this tragedy for veterans and their families. Reporting from East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Carrie Hyatt.
La Mesa's City Council voted down a proposal by Mayor Art Madrid that would have banned council members from using their cell phones during public meetings, including closed sessions. Mayor Madrid argued that since members of the public in the audience are asked to silence their cell phones, council members should too. Madrid said it's a sign of disrespect for council members to have a double standard that requires audience members to leave the room if they want to speak on their phones, while allowing council members to talk or text as they please. But council members won out, voting to keep the double standard. Council members said they do silence the ringer on their phones, but want to keep receiving and sending text messages during meetings. Councilman Ernie Ewan said he has received alerts from the police department and likes to get messages from his wife when she's traveling. He's also received notices of a relative's death via his cell phone during a meeting, he said. Councilwoman Christina Licio indicated she uses her cell phone to take notes and has texted her teenage daughter during meetings. La Mesa resident Patrick Dean asked the city attorney if cell phone messages made during meetings would be required to be disclosed as public records. The attorney said that personal messages would be exempt, but if a communication involved city business, it could be disclosable under the Brown Act, California's open meeting law. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
San Diego's Board of Supervisors on Tuesday extended a solar energy financing program to homeowners, making it easier for consumers to tap into the sun and other energy-saving improvements. The board voted 5-0 to expand an initiative known as PACE, or the Property Assessed Clean Energy Program, to homes in the region's unincorporated communities. The county program previously applied only to commercial properties. The program will now allow homeowners to install or upgrade solar projects and make other energy efficiency improvements with the help of private loans from designated vendors. The money is repaid through a surcharge on property tax bills. Supervisor Diane Jacob, board chairwoman, said this is a huge breakthrough because it will provide another path for homeowners to tap into solar energy and unplug themselves from SDG&E. This brings us closer to a vision many of us share, rooftop solar all across sunny San Diego County, she said. Residential PACE also gives residents of the unincorporated area another great opportunity to install energy-saving devices in their homes, said Supervisor Dave Roberts. And it puts people to work and really helps stimulate the economy, he added. Residential PACE will result in energy and water savings for county residents and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This is a big step forward for the region, he concluded. The two supervisors have led the county's drive to bring PACE to homeowners, an effort made easier by a related state bill that was signed into law last year. Under the expanded program, homeowners will be able to apply for PACE loans starting within the next few months.
For information on the vendors and the PACE program, you can visit heroprogram.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Last month, we reported that monarch butterflies' annual migration is down 90%. Various theories have been proposed, but now a new study by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service reveals that hundreds upon hundreds of butterflies, including monarchs, along with other butterfly species and dragonflies, were found dead at Ivanpah, the largest solar facility in the United States, located in California's Mojave Desert. Some butterflies appear singed, while others seem to have fallen from the sky. Observation with binoculars showed that the butterflies and other insects were congregating near the boiler at the top of the solar tower, apparently attracted by the bright light. Birds then flew into the path of destruction, attracted by the insects on which they feed. The report also chronicles birds burned alive or mortally wounded. Some had also suffered internal hemorrhaging. The report calls Ivanpah a megatrap that is killing multiple species. A total of 233 birds, including 71 different species, were found dead or dying at three solar sites studied, each of which used different technologies: Genesis, Desert Sunlight, and Ivanpah. Genesis relied on a trough system with parabolic mirrors. Desert Sunlight utilizes photovoltaic solar, while Ivanpah has a power tower which concentrates sunlight using solar flux. Ivanpah proved by far the deadliest. 141 of the total 233 bird deaths found were at Ivanpah. Of those, four died from solar flux, Ivanpah's unique solar concentrating technology. Desert Sunlight also had a high number of bird deaths, 67, mostly from impact trauma and predation, troubling since photovoltaic technology is common. Genesis had 31 bird deaths at its facility, most from undetermined causes. At Ivanpah, some birds that flew into the solar flux actually ignited. Others, burned and injured seriously, were later consumed by predators on the ground. Still others were killed by impact after flying into the solar equipment. The report found that a lake effect of shimmering solar panels is also likely attracting migratory birds such as waterfowl. Some injured birds may have flown beyond the study area, while others were likely taken by predators before they were found. Thus, the authors conclude that the true number of deaths is underestimated, perhaps vastly so. The birds killed included migratory songbirds, raptors such as hawks and owls, ground birds including roadrunners, waterfowl, and many others. The authors propose possible steps to reduce deaths, ranging from netting to making equipment less attractive to birds to shutting off the system during bird migrations. But it is unknown how effective such steps would be. No solution, however, has yet been found to the massive butterfly deaths chronicled only at Ivanpah, raising serious concerns about approval of any future facilities using solar flux technology, especially along routes taken by migrating monarch butterflies or birds. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson. You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program begins with a champagne brunch and other Easter events, and ends with fishing and a spring harp festival. But that's not all. We have a fabulous preview of some great upcoming events all right here in East County. The Cottonwood Golf Club is featuring a champagne Easter brunch in their pavilion and spring gardens with lake views on Sunday, April 20th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The brunch includes meat carving stations, a waffle station, entrees, dessert, offerings, and much more, all on Easter Sunday morning. Saturday, April 19th is the last day to ride the Bunny Train, a real train out at the Campo Depot and Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. The Bunny Train has lots of Easter eggs and fun craft activities for the kids. Trains depart Campo Depot at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. for a scenic one-hour round-trip journey through the mountains with the Easter Bunny. Advance reservations required for this event at www.psrm.org. The 60th Annual Easter Pancake Breakfast will be held in Alpine on Easter Sunday, April 20th, from 7 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. at the Alpine Elementary School Auditorium in Alpine. And for more information, contact the Alpine Chamber of Commerce. Santee Lakes Extravaganza and Egg Hunts will be celebrated on Saturday, April 19th, most of the day from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The egg hunts are for children ages 3 to 8 years old. Dogs are prohibited on site. The continuous egg hunts are first come, first served. Other fun activities throughout the day include Primo DJ, pony rides, a petting zoo, bounce houses, face painting, crafts booths, food, carnival rides, and games. At the San Carlos Recreation Center on Saturday, April 19th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., the annual Spring Carnival and Egg Hunt for kids 0 to 12 will be presented. Activities include the egg hunts, air jumpers, live music, a DJ, and more egg hunts are every half hour, starting with the little ones from 0 to 2 years at 10:30 a.m., and ending with the 9 to 12-year-olds at 12 p.m. Baskets are not provided. This event is sponsored by the San Carlos Lake Murray Recreation Council and the City of San Diego Park and Recreation Department. Pine Hills Lodge in Julian is holding an Easter brunch and egg hunt on Easter Sunday, April 20th. The egg hunt begins at 11 a.m. Reservations are required for the brunch, which is served from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Croc Hop Bunny Drop will be happening at the Ray and Joan Croc Community Center on Saturday, April 19th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Croc Community Church is hosting its 10th annual free community Easter egg hunt and festival, with more than 2,000 local children expected, who can enjoy visits and pictures with the Easter Bunny, bounce houses, arts and crafts, music, carnival games, and exciting prizes. This year, they are introducing the new toddler zone for children under 3 years old. Kids 4 to 11 years old are invited to hunt for more than 15,000 eggs on the Croc Center field. Ramona is hosting their annual egg hunt on Saturday, April 19th at 10 a.m. at Dos Picos Regional Park in Ramona. They plan to have 4,000 goodie-filled eggs awaiting children in three designated zones for ages 2 and under, ages 3 to 5, and ages 6 and older. Stick around after the hunt to play the life-size Candyland game. The Easter Bunny will be hopping by for photo ops and also furry hugs. Visitors in Spring Valley can have breakfast with the Easter Bunny there and hunt for eggs at the Spring Valley Community Center on Hamishaw Boulevard in Spring Valley. Breakfast with the Bunny includes pancakes, sausage, juice, coffee, and milk, all served by Kiwanis volunteers. Then the entire family can enjoy a special visit from Spring Valley's own Bunny. The free egg hunt is for ages 2 through 10 and starts at 9 a.m. sharp. Our last egg hunt is a unique knockoff from the original egg hunt, and it's just for the older kids. A teen glow-in-the-dark egg hunt will take place in Poway at the Lake Poway Pavilion on Poway Road on Friday night, April 18th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. This glow-in-the-dark egg hunt for teens 6th through 9th grade who can join the quest can hunt 1,000 glow-in-the-dark eggs, and they will be filled with candy, gift cards, and tons of marvelous prizes. Early registration is recommended as spots are limited for this free event. Fishing is back at Cottonwood Golf Club in Lake Number 1 only on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Contact the Cottonwood Pro Shop for more information and to buy tickets. Cottonwood Golf Club is located at Willow Glen Drive in El Cajon. The Spring Harp Festival is a free all-day event happening on Saturday, April 19th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. This annual festival was originally founded in 1999 to promote the American art form of the blues harmonica. Some of Southern California's finest harmonica players perform at this annual Spring Harp Fest. It's a family-friendly outdoor event located at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa, California. Now for our preview for you of some seasonal traditional events that are returning in East County in the next couple of weeks, as well as some other new ones that will be coming up. Cajon Classic Cruises returns again this year beginning on Wednesday, April 23rd from 5 to 8 p.m. This annual car show is held in the area of the Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon and is hosted by the downtown El Cajon Business Partners. Cajon Classic Cruise car shows are held every Wednesday night and continue through October 29th. The first car show will involve a full street closure of East Main Street between Magnolia and Claydell Avenues from 5 to 8 p.m. The Wings of Freedom aircraft tour will be stopping at the Ramona Airport on Wednesday, April 23rd through Friday, April 25th. Aviation enthusiasts and war history buffs can enjoy a unique display at Ramona Airport of World War II aircraft, including the B-17 Flying Fortress, B-24 Liberator, and P-51 Mustang. There are walkthrough tours as well as actual flights in a few of the vintage aircraft, including a B-17 bomber. The 49th Annual Lakeside Western Days Parade's theme for this year is Lakeside, Where the West is Still Alive, and celebrates the Lakeside Rodeo's 50th anniversary. The event will take place on Saturday, April 26th at 9:35 a.m. along Woodside and Main Avenue. This year's parade grand marshal is the El Capitan Stadium Association for 50 years of organizing the Lakeside Rodeo. The parade will be filled with a wide variety of antique and classic cars, bands and entertainment from local schools, floats representing local businesses and organizations, clowns, and of course, cowboys and cowgirls. To get ready for the parade the night before on April 18th, Friday night, the Optimist Club of Lakeside will be offering its 33rd annual Western Days Barbecue Dinner, served at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds from 5:30 to 8 p.m. The menu is deep pit barbecue beef with all the fixings. The annual Lakeside Rodeo will take place the same weekend as the Lakeside Parade and Western Days Celebration. Performances are scheduled throughout Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 25th, 26th, and 27th. At the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds, spectators can enjoy Western-style fun with bronc riding, barrel racing, steer wrestling, roping competitions, and more. The Lemon Grove Historical Society presents a Day at the Historic 1892 Troxell Manor and Gardens. Lemon Grove's third oldest home, which was built by William and Marianne Troxell on Saturday, April 26th, that is the day for you to visit, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can tour the manor and its gardens with ancient trees and a working organic garden and orchard. Also available will be demonstrations and live music under the trees with guitarist John Gardner. Guests can also observe artists at work and enjoy refreshments and tastings. Garden-related door prizes will be given out. The 6th Annual Coyote Music Festival will be hosted by Cuyamaca Community College on the campus Grand Lawn on Saturday, April 26th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. The festival features 7 bands of up-and-coming local talent that will showcase all original music compositions. These homegrown singer-songwriters will perform a variety of genres, including acoustic, folk, rock, and pop. The event is free, open to the public, and has free parking. A springtime English-style high tea amidst blooming fields of lavender will be served up at the Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center. Their menu includes lemon lavender scones with jam and Devonshire cream, appetizers, sandwiches, smoked turkey, truffled egg salad, chicken tarragon, fresh fruit, raspberry cream roulade, Viennese chocolate vanilla crescents, lavender lady kisses, and an assortment of hot teas. The high teas will be served at 2 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, April 25th and 26th. The 19th annual East County Garden Tour, put on by the Friends of East County Arts, Inc., takes place on Saturday, April 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. All six gardens offer a variety of settings to learn from and enjoy. Included in the tour this year are water-wise settings, unique garden corners, an African-themed explosion of colorful characters and drought-tolerant plants, St. Madeline Sophie's two-acre organic garden and nursery, which sells many wonderful plants, and apple crate vendors offering crafts and garden creations for purchase. The Wine and Rail event embarks on Saturday, April 26th at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo and the Campo Depot, where riders can enjoy an afternoon of leisure in the beautiful backcountry riding the historic Pacific Southwest Rails. Altogether, there will be live presentations by local wineries, heavy hors d'oeuvres, presentations by historians and wineries, as well as the scenic train ride, all put on by the Mountain Empire, Campo, Kiwanis, and the East County Vintners Association. A self-guided tour of the museum is also included. Guests may also win door prizes and vie for raffle baskets. Next year marks the century milestone of the founding of Akumba Hot Springs. Although the community of Akumba was settled in the middle 1800s, the first time the community appeared in an official document was in a State of California Railroad Commission document dated 1914. So four major festivals are planned for the centennial, including the third annual Blues Festival on Saturday, May 3rd. You'll be hearing more details about this music festival and much more in our next Destination East County. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
In 2007, when the devastating wildfires ripped through San Diego County, John Hartman and his family were left without a home. But the fires took more than replaceable items. They also separated the family from their dog, Buddy. But a $10 microchip implanted in Buddy 2 years before the fires is now responsible for reuniting the family, nearly 7 years after he went missing. Hartman said someone found Buddy soon after the fires and took him to a vet. But the dog quickly escaped, and the family thought they had lost Buddy for good. Since then, Hartman and his wife moved to Oklahoma, but on a recent trip to San Diego to visit their son, they got one very surprise call from the County Department of Animal Services. After 7 years, Buddy had been found. Someone who reported finding the black lab loose in Imperial Beach dropped off the dog at the County Gaines Street Animal Shelter on March 28th. Staff scanned the dog for a microchip and matched it up to Hartman. We've reunited animals from across the country and even the world with their owners, but 7 years is one of the longest time periods we were able to reunite a pet and its owner, said Dan D'Souza, Deputy Director of Animal Services. The story could have had a tragic ending when the dog was lost during the wildfires, but the happy ending of this dog being reunited with its owner after moving from out of state can't be beat.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.